This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Whether we like it or not, the 2020 race for president is on. Would-be candidates are hiring staff. They're planning trips to Iowa and New Hampshire. They're making phone calls for money, of course, and they're giving interviews. And that's been keeping our Washington correspondent, Susan Glasser, pretty busy.
So we're standing here in the soaring atrium of the Senate Hart office building. It's the only modern office building of the three Senate office buildings. And, you know, it doesn't get a lot of love, but I actually have always liked it in particular because there's this grand marble atrium and it's totally dominated by this huge Alexander Calder sculpture called Mountain and Clouds. It's a gigantic black steel thing. And of course, it ends at a very pointy top at the top of those mountains, which always seemed to me to be the perfect metaphor in some ways for Capitol Hill, where pretty much everybody is looking to get to the top.
Glasser was on Capitol Hill that day to speak with Amy Klobuchar, who was elected to the Senate from Minnesota in 2006. Klobuchar recently made an impression on many observers of the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings when she questioned the judge on his early drinking habits, and he answered sharply and then later had to apologize. She was just reelected by a wide margin in the midterms, and she's one of the many Democratic senators who's considering a run for the presidency in 2020. Susan Glasser spoke with Amy Klobuchar in her office just last week.
I know, you know, the sort of Washington Beltway reporters are constantly going out to see the rest of the country and saying, what's happening there? How do you talk to Trump voters? So you've actually talked to Trump voters and gotten them to vote for you. What are the one or two ways that you did that?
Well, I think the first is that you have to show up and you have to go not just where it's comfortable, but where it's uncomfortable. And that's why I visited all 87 counties every year. One time I found myself in a business called Insect Inferno because we had run out of places to visit. It was near the Canadian border, a Trump county. And I was in this truck and it said on the outside of it, Insect Inferno, we kill bed bugs with heat. And the whole concept was they would drive around and you put mattresses in them and then they would put the temperature up to 300 degrees. So when I was in there, they put it up to only 100. But again, I thought to myself, you go not just where it's comfortable, but where it's uncomfortable. And to me, that means being there. So that's the first measure, and not avoiding it. And then two, understanding that not one size fits all. There are issues that transcend urban-rural, like, for instance, you don't want to kick people off of their insurance for pre-existing conditions. That was something that you saw Democrats run on and win on. Mm-hmm. But then there are other issues that are unique, and I would put critical access hospitals, rural broadband. Most people in urban areas don't have to worry about that. And a lot of parts of our rural countryside can't even access cell phone service, much less broadband. Their cell phones keep going in and out. And I don't understand, as I pointed out to the Farmers Union, how you can have rural cell phone service all over Iceland and not in northern Minnesota.
But I got to ask you, Donald Trump obviously isn't talking to people about rural broadband service, right? You know, he's not a technocrat. He's not immersed in the details of policy. Arguably, he's not even all that ideological, or he has a mishmash of different ideologies. So it's great that there are issues that appeal to different people, but does that still matter as much in this sort of post-ideological age?
I think it matters when someone makes promises and then time goes on and your life hasn't changed. So mm-hmm. I do think it matters. And when you add disruptions in and chaos that make things hard for you. So I think those things matter. But I think what you're getting at, which is really values, and it is kind of the argument that I feel in rural and I think helped me to get support, is that you really have to go to the core of what kind of person do you want to have in the White House that your kids watch on TV when they're learning their civics lesson and the Pledge of Allegiance in first and second grade. The second thing is that Donald Trump just doesn't talk policies and facts. In fact, he oftentimes gives statements that are completely contrary to the evidence, like what he just said on climate change when his own administration predicted dire consequences from climate change. So I think you not just have to meet him with facts, and you certainly don't want to go down every rabbit hole with him, but we have to meet him with emotion. And it doesn't have to be negative emotion. It can be positive emotion. So when he starts talking about caravans and mobs and all those things, you know what I say? I say, when I talk to our people about pre-existing conditions, I just don't use that boring term that a lot of people don't quite know what it means. I tell the story of a woman coming up to me in a parade with her baby carriage with a kid in it. And she says, you know what? This is my son. I'll do anything for him in the world. He has Down syndrome. He is a pre-existing condition. This is what a pre-existing condition looks like. So you say, you know what, President Trump, really your administration is arguing to kick people off their insurance for pre-existing conditions. This is the kid you're talking about. So I think it's very important to respond to him, but to not let it dominate what your own agenda is.
A lot of people remember your star turn in the Kavanaugh hearings.
You're asking about, blackout. I don't know. Have you?
Could you answer the question, Judge? That's not happened. Is that your answer?
Yeah, and I'm curious if you have.
I have no drinking problem, Judge.
Yeah, nor do I.
Okay, thank you.
Your response to Kavanaugh was so kind of straightforward, unpersonalized, a different kind of politics than we're used to. Do you see a lasting effect up here in the Senate as a result of that incredibly traumatic, I think for a lot of people, confirmation hearing on both sides, actually?
It was. But when you really go to the guts of what happened, you had a situation where a nominee decided at a very critical hearing where a woman who my own colleagues on the other side of the aisle said she had great credibility had come forward, and then he decided to politicize it in his statements, the way that he literally attacked Democratic senators. And I said the next day, excuse me, we can't control sometimes what happens in the criminal justice system or in politics. Things come at you that you wish you hadn't gotten. The question is not, does that happen? The question is, when you're in a position of power, what do you do about it? So my plea to my colleagues was, we need an investigation. We need to make sure that this doesn't happen again in terms of having information hidden and 42,000 documents dumped on us the day before. So do I hope that this changed things because it was so traumatic? Yes. Do I know how this is going to go with the next opening? No, I don't.
Do you think that he still should be investigated? I mean, should the matter rest now that it's been confirmed?
Well, I know there's some complaints that are being in the court system. I mean, that would be the procedural way to handle them, but there's no open way for us to do that now. And my own experience with this was just I was pretty shocked when he shot back at me when I was simply asking him questions. And then I felt it was very important for the dignity of the of Dr. Ford and the dignity of the Senate and the dignity of our country to not go down there with him and to not land where he landed, because I think there's way too much of this going on in politics. It's starting with the White House.
You know, dignity is definitely not the word that is going to come to mind when people write histories of this moment in Washington. Senator Klobuchar, final lightning round here. On a scale of 1 to 10, where are you in terms of running for 2020?
Well, as I've said before, I am considering it, but I never rate scale things. Our beauty contest numbers, so I'm not going there. But I have been talking to people in my state and people around the country about it. I think that there are a lot of good people considering this, but I do think you want voices from the Midwest, and I think you want to have people with different views running. I think it's really important to have that. I don't think it's bad that we have a competition for the nomination at this key moment in our nation's history.
You know, you say you want voices from the Midwest, and 2016 was decided in the Midwest. Is there a risk of overlearning the last battle, refighting the last war?
Good question. I think this will all basically sort itself out. It won't always be pretty, but I think that a lot of the
presidential
people,
candidates is not going to be.
It probably won't end up at that number. But I do think on the Midwestern front, my husband is the third of six kids, and his mom, they grew up in a trailer home, and they would go out on vacation, and oftentimes when they came out of the gas station, she would have them each count off to make sure they were all in the car, because my husband was always the sweet, quiet one, and she was afraid he would be left at the gas station. And the Midwest was left at the gas station, and we're not going to let that happen again. And I think that is more than a metaphor just for the Midwest. It was a lot of middle class voters. It was a lot of citizens that felt that they weren't getting a fair shake in the system, that they were like having to ration their insulin, like a kid that died in Minnesota, a restaurant manager recently was doing. They weren't feeling like they were treated right. And I think our party and whoever is our nominee has to be able to respond to those people in a way that we weren't doing in that last election.
Senator Amy Klobuchar, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Susan Glasser is a staff writer for The New Yorker, and you can find her column, Letter from Trump's Washington, every week at newyorker.com.